And now
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
The KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. Thank you for making us a part of your NCAA Tournament Friday. Ben, we are live once again today at JCW's, albeit a different location. Yesterday, shout out to the American Fork location. They were great. Thanks to everybody for coming. We had a terrific time. Bunch of listeners came by. We were super excited about it. And today, we expect the same, Ben. So if you're listening to the show, we're at JCW's in Harriman, right off the Mountain View Corridor. And what is this right out here, Ben? 118 South?
Something like that.
Right here on the corner. I mean, it's super easy to get to. Tons of places to park. TVs galore. We'll have all the games on, and this is going to be a great place for you to watch it. And since it's just 10 o'clock right now, Ben, there's still plenty of time to, like, work up your excuse.
Start coughing.
Whatever.
Start coughing now.
I don't know. You know, client meeting.
Work. I got.
It's gonna be long.
Boss, I gotta go, man. I think this is contagious.
It's
whatever this is. I can't be here.
You gotta figure it out. And the good thing is you have time to figure it out, which is great because the first games don't start until actually 10 minutes, but things don't really get going until up towards 11. Game number two, Colgate and Baylor start at 10:40, then UAB and San Diego State at 11:45. So by noon, by lunchtime, we're in full swing, and I love it that we get started as early as 10:15. We've got 9-seed Northwestern against 8-seed Florida Atlantic.
For the right to play UConn in the next round.
In the East region.
A couple of Utah games this weekend, right? Utah men's basketball back in the NIT on Sunday. Utah women kicks off the tournament tomorrow night. So we'll talk to Michelle about that coming up as well. Hopefully catch up with Scotty G, talk about some Utah State. They're playing tonight, the late game.
How did your bracket turn out yesterday, Ben?
I've lost one Sweet 16 bracket because I had Kentucky actually not losing to Oakland in the first round, and then I had Texas Tech beating NC State. So I had them in the round of 32, and neither will be playing one another. So I need something. Oh, man, I had Texas Tech in the Elite Eight also.
How many?
So I'm in trouble. I'm a little bit of trouble.
How many total points did you have, do you know?
Total points? Oh, man, how do you even look that up?
You go to the groups.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway.
I'll pull it up.
But just for the sake of our show here, I had 20 total points in the first round. First round.
How about one of our guys, Darren B., in the KSL Sports Group, has 30 points. Killing it. Did you get all of them right?
Here,
you have a perfect bracket? What's going on with you? I also have 20 points.
You also have 20 points.
Yeah.
Sarah, how many points did you have on the first day?
I think I also had 20 points as well.
Wow, we're all tied?
We didn't do very good. That means none of us did very well.
I didn't lose a Sweet 16 team.
Okay. So you're better than me there.
I mean, I missed on some. Like, I had Kentucky over Oakland as well. But I did have NC State beating Texas Tech. Thank you very much. And then I actually had NC State then beating Kentucky to go to the Sweet 16. So my NC State to the Sweet 16. I don't want to jinx it here, Ben.
But it's alive.
But it's actually looking.
They just need to get past Oakland?
Looking pretty good. Yeah.
I actually had Oakland upsetting Kentucky.
Hey, Sarah.
Well, we need this Golkey kid. We need Jimmer 2.0, who ate up all the skills of Reed Shepard from Kentucky, just assumed everything he did, and we need him to stop. Because if he hits 10 threes again, you guys are both going to be in trouble.
Here were my misses yesterday, Ben. Kentucky.
Yep.
The Cougs.
Yep.
I had the Cougs beating Duquesne. Mississippi State, which Michigan State is terrible. Yep. How did that happen?
Well, they win every first-round matchup. I don't know why I thought that wouldn't be the case.
South Carolina, I give Oregon a lot of credit. They're playing really well right now.
They are.
I had Colorado State over Texas, missed on that. And I had Nevada over Dayton. Thanks a lot, Mountain Worst. Come on. We've got San Diego State today starting at, what time? 11:45, I think. We need the Mountain Worst to get it together.
Yeah, I had Nevada, Drake, BYU, Texas Tech, Kentucky. I think those were my whiffs. Oh, and USC. Thanks for nothing, USC.
San Diego State.
By the way, USC, South Carolina, not USC, the Troj, who were terrible this year.
Yes, they were. San Diego State plays UAB at 11:45. So you think the Mountain Worst would have a chance to...
We'll see.
I have a Pac-12-related tournament question for our next guest. She covers the Utes for KSLSports.com. She does terrific work. She's our friend Michelle Botkin. What's going on, Michelle?
Oh, you know, just getting prepared for a crazy, crazy weekend for the Utes.
Before we get to the Utes, do you find it as hilarious as I do that Oregon State and Washington State get all of the units that the Pac-12 earns this year? So every game that Oregon wins or Colorado wins or whatever, all that dough is going to Oregon State and Washington State?
It is kind of funny and it's kind of sad, but I think, you know, at the end of the day, just because of how everything played out and where that left Oregon State and Washington State, you know, good for them. Like, they deserve to get something out of this. Everyone else kind of, you know, found a way to benefit and it be okay, at least for a year or two. We'll see, you know, what ultimately ends up happening with this whole thing. I don't think we're done by a long shot, but... they're the ones that got left in a precarious situation. So you know what, if they reap the benefits of others' hard work, I think that's probably more than fair considering just where they got left. So
let's start with Utah Men. Sorry, Michelle. Let's start with Utah Men before we get to the women. Hosting Iowa coming up on Sunday, coming off of a win in the opening round. Do you expect excitement around this NIT run to build if they keep winning games?
I kind of suspect it probably will. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, this is a really great opportunity. Utah potentially could play three games at home. Obviously, they get to play two. We'll see what happens after this next round. But there could be a third game at the Huntsman Center. And I don't think it can be stated enough just what Brandon Carlson has meant for that program. Between all the records he set, between the loyalty and just some of the excitement he brings to the court, this is just a really great opportunity, I think, for Utah fans to enjoy him for just a little bit longer at home where they can see him and cheer him on. So I hope people will show up more. I know Tuesday was a little bit hard. 9 o'clock on a Tuesday is just woof. Like, nobody wants to do that. Everybody has school and work and some of that kind of stuff. So I don't really blame anyone for not showing up to that one, but hopefully they'll be here for the Sunday game. I think it's a little bit of a more intriguing matchup and just a better time to have a game.
So, Michelle, I want to broaden it out about Utah basketball for a second here, because it seems pretty amazing to me that their last tournament win was when Jakob Poeltl was playing, because he's now been, what, a salty NBA vet?
Right.
I mean, he's
on his third contract,
not even like a young player anymore. Who was the big they played against for Duke? Was it Jahlil Okafor that they lost to in the Sweet 16, right? And he's not even in the league anymore,
right?
You know? I mean, it was a long time ago. And, you know, you followed Utah sports you've covered them for a long time, but followed them for even longer. You know, this was such a great basketball program, you know, for a really extended period of time. What are the factors, in your opinion, that have led to the lack of success over now what's been a pretty long time?
Yeah, you know, I think it's just been some bad coaching hires. And I think basketball is a game, and by no means, like, I didn't really grow up in a basketball house, so I'm just kind of learning a lot of this as we go. But the way I kind of see it, the way I look at it, you know, from conversations I've had and some of that kind of stuff. I think basketball has just really, really drastically changed. You know, you have guys that can bounce after a year and go to the NBA. You have now guys that can also transfer anywhere they want to, or as many times as they want to, if they're not satisfied with the situation there. So, you know, I think this Utah program for a long, long time hung its hat on, you know, we are a great institution. We make all these runs in the NCAA tournament. And at some point it switched, but Utah didn't switch. Kids and players, they don't care about that anymore. They don't care about the history. They don't care about the pride. They care about, you know, what they're going to get for it and how quickly they can get it. And I think that's also been a bit of a problem, but I think you've had coaches that have kind of kept trying to, you know, push or sell, you know, this great history. And I don't think that matters anymore so much. It's not something that's really going to reel in anybody. So I think the mindset has to change. I think Craig Smith is kind of getting it. But it also takes a lot of cooperation from a lot of different people, right? It's not just Craig Smith that has to, you know, make these sales pitches. It's, you know, boosters have to be willing to cough up the coin for the time being. That's, you know, how that's set up. And I know that it's sometimes hard to part with money when you feel like you're investing in a product that's inferior. So there's a little bit of a double-edged sword there as well, I think. But I'm not as pessimistic as a lot of people. I think I'm seeing, you know, some progress and some steps in the right direction. And maybe, hopefully, a healthy marriage of the concept of, you know, building a good culture and hanging your hat on the history. Because I do think that's still important. But I just don't think that's the biggest selling point to these kids. And so I think now the move is just kind of adjusting and getting the money aspect and what you get out of being here aspect in line. And as soon as they do that, I think you'll start seeing this program take off a little bit more. Like I said, I think we're seeing signs of it. I think this NIT run is a big, big deal for this program. But, you know, there's point blank, there is more work to be done.
Does Utah women opening on the road in Spokane as opposed to hosting their opening round games significantly change how far you think they can go in this tournament, considering they might end up facing Gonzaga in what would be a home game for the Zags in the second round?
Yeah. I mean, it certainly makes it more difficult, right? And I was actually just re-listening to an interview that Lynn Roberts did after they found out where they were going. And she talked about how the basketball culture up there in Spokane at Gonzaga is really good. And so, you know, they expect great crowds and people being really excited and invested in the fact that not only they're there, but the other three teams, including the home team Gonzaga, are there. So, you know, I think that makes it a little more difficult when, you know, you're, the crowd is not with you per se, but you know, this is a pretty battle tested team. They have four top 10 wins on the season, and they kind of did it without some of their key players. So I think that speaks a lot to their ability to get this done. And you know, the Pac-12 is a crazy conference when it comes to women's basketball. Obviously we talk about it a little bit differently in regard to the men's game, But women's basketball is kind of where it's at there. So I think they're prepared. I think they're ready. I think they can probably get back to the Sweet 16. I don't know if they can make it further like they kind of wanted to. I think not having Gianna and Izzy is probably going to put some limits on exactly how far they can go. But I think they can make a pretty good run. And I think, you know, matching what they did last year would be a fantastic goal for this team.
How's their health going into it, Michelle? Because that's obviously been an issue all year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm still not expecting Izzy. Izzy's situation is a little bit odd. And so it's just kind of one of those things. She could be ready to go. She could not be ready to go. I'm expecting her not to be ready to go. Obviously, no Giannis. Hers was season ending, so she is not going to be available. Let's see, when was that? That was the Washington game, the final home game for Utah, the season closer against Washington. Deja Young, I believe, hurt her shoulder. And as we saw in the Pac-12 tournament, she was a little bit limited as to her minutes. I expect her to be in a little bit better shape. But then you look at Inés Vieira that got the crap absolutely beaten out of her against UCLA. So I think, she continued to play despite having two stoppages to kind of peel her off the court twice. But I think she'll be ready to go. And then, you have someone like Jenna Johnson that had three sets of stitches within like a 2-week span. She's going to be playing as well. So I think everyone that's actually available to them will play. And hopefully, this little bit of a break allows them to just go into it a little bit healthier.
Michelle, thank you very much, as always, for jumping on with us. We always look forward to it. Enjoy, if you can, your busy weekend, but also try and take in a little tourney.
Well, I will be up in Spokane with the women and keeping tabs on Utah gymnastics, and then most likely keeping tabs of the men from afar. So it's going to be a busy weekend, but it should be fun.
Thanks, Michelle. You're the best.
Have fun, Michelle. Thank you.
All right, that's the one and only Michelle Bodkin, covers the Utes for KSLSports.com. And, yes, she's got a lot, randomly, a lot going on right now.
I think a Sweet 16 run from the Utah women should be expected. I think that's fair. I think they can beat Gonzaga. I think they're probably better than the 5 seed that they ended up drawing. What they have 3 top 10 wins this season, including a number 1 seed in USC on the road. So they can win on the road. That's not a big deal for them at all. So I'm thinking a Sweet 16, and then go out and stun Texas or whoever you end up playing. That's who you're going to run into. And then, yeah, men, extend your livelihood a little bit. You agreed to go to the NIT. You won your first game. Might as well make a push.
Florida Atlantic and Northwestern off to a roaring start.
Jeez, looks like the BYU game.
2-1.
3 minutes in.
3 minutes in. 2-1. We'll see what happens. I will say this, Ben. It was fun to be in the building last night. I was doing jazz, obviously, but our studio there at Delta Center. And It was cool to see the...
Did you poke your head in?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Tons of fans there. Jamil went to the producer of Jazz Broadcast. He went to the first session, and he said it was packed.
Yep.
Packed in the morning. And, good on everybody who supported that whole thing, because it obviously isn't just the fans of the teams that are there.
Not to take this as an opportunity to insult Utah basketball, which I feel like I've done too much lately, but it's like that's what's so weird about what's going on with the Utah men's program. This is a basketball town.
Yeah, I don't know if it's weird anymore, though. That's the thing. That's what I was kind of thinking, like, they've been bad for so long. Is it really that weird?
Yeah, it is, because we're a basketball town, because we can have an NCAA tournament game or host the opening round on a Thursday and get a lot of energy and get a lot of people up in the building. And obviously, they support it out in Logan. They support it out in Provo. So it's weird that in Salt Lake City, Utah men has – it's, and I don't blame the fans. It's not the fans' fault they stopped going to a bad product. It's what people do. You get a bad product, people stop going. And it's been a really bad product for a while. So I'm surprised it's dropped off that far, because this is a basketball town. It has rich basketball talent. But apparently it just has not translated up on the hill.
I'm trying to find it, Ben, and maybe I saw it on Twitter, but they released the schedule for Saturday. And, oh, here it is. This is why the NCAA – like, listen, I think the NCAA gets criticized probably too much, honestly, just because they get blasted all the time. But they make decisions that don't make any sense. So on Saturday, there will be 2 games in Salt Lake, and they put them in the morning – 10:45 tip between Dayton and Arizona, and then a 1:15 tip between Gonzaga and Kansas. Isn't the point of having a Western location to put it
in the afternoon?
In the afternoon or evening? Isn't that like the entire idea? Now listen, I'm for more sports being played during the day here in this market. I don't like getting stuck at night. So maybe I shouldn't complain, but that doesn't make any sense.
No, because these are the early games. It's not like they're doing this because they're trying to work around somebody else's schedule. No, the Eastern Conference game should be early because it's already noon there, or 2 o'clock there if you want to have a you know, noon Pacific game. But, yeah, that's a 9:45 Pacific game on the West Coast. 10:45 here, the first game, Dayton at Arizona. Good matchups, though.
Sure.
Dayton, Arizona, Gonzaga, Kansas. That's great. Both pretty centrally located. Not Dayton necessarily, but the other two.
So the late night game will be at 9:40 Eastern, Ben. And that's going to be played in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, right. 9:40 Eastern. Played in the Eastern time zone. You're right. That's moronic.
It just doesn't make
any
sense.
That's idiots running the show.
Yeah, and I guess maybe you think that the West region is the best, and that's going to be all alone on CBS, doesn't have to split with TBS and True TV, so maybe that's the factor, but okay.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. You're right.
Okay.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Sounds good. All right, we're up to 4-4 now between Northwestern and Florida Atlantic. So
call that a barn burner, Jake.
Shots are starting to fall, Ben. We'll talk about yesterday's action. We'll talk about BYU. We'll talk about the Jazz.
Okay.
We are live from JCW's in Harriman, which we would encourage you to come see us. Are you going to get the same thing today, Ben, or are you going to switch it up?
I think I might go with the fish and chips. I saw those guys eating it yesterday, and it looked so good.
You did. You came over, and you commented. You're like, that might be my jam.
I might have to do that.
Come on out and see us. We're out here at the Harriman location right off the Mountain View Corridor. And 118th South is really easy to get to. Stop by, see us, watch the games. It's the Jake and Ben Show, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day.
Let's go!
This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll.
Oh, it's Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone, live at JCW's in Harriman. Come see us. Ah, Sarah.
We were talking about Sarah's high variance rock bands before the show.
Very funny. High variance rock bands. Yeah, where their best is just great and their worst is so bad.
If we built the city on rock and roll.
And Jefferson Airplane / Starship was kind of my answer.
Yep.
You know what else is honestly an answer? And we got to be, you know, think about it. Mm-hmm. But Queen is that.
Okay. Sure.
Their whole thing heard is a bad little, Queen?
Their whole thing is a little kitschy in general, right? Like
right.
They're a little glammy and kitschy, etc. And that's kind of the joke. But yeah, bad Queen. Oof.
Like I played the music video Under the Bridge from Red Hot Chili Peppers today for my daughter. And there's a band that's just consistently good. You know, they don't really do a whole lot of bad stuff. Now, maybe you say it all sounds alike, which I'd listen to that argument. But it's not really like awful.
So did Jefferson Airplane just get bad when Grace Slick left, or what was the deal? Is that what happened?
I think she was still with the Starship.
Still Starship, okay.
No, I think they
I honestly don't
they,
know their history
they started out as like a Haight-Ashbury hippie band mm-hmm. from San Francisco, and then that started making money, and then some record exec was
got his hands on
hey, it. How about let's move on into the 80s, shall
let's get
we?
Poppy.
Let's make this happen.
Okay.
All right, time for the top three stories of the day. KSLSports.com brought to you by J. Brooks Jewelers. Two locations to serve you, one on Winchester Street across from Fash Place Mall, the other at Traverse Mountain in Lehigh. All right, Sarah, where are we starting today?
Number one, BYU is out in round one of the tourney.
Jake, I hate to say that all the things we talked about, why you lose tournament games or the reasons you lose tournament games, but we kind of saw it, right? I mean, unfortunately for BYU, their issue was as long as they make shots, they're going to win games. And they did not make their threes at a high enough rate. That was a problem. But, man, they were less athletic than Duquesne, which should not have been an issue with how well they played throughout the Big 12 season and kind of surprised everybody. And then when they needed to create shots late in games with your guards, their guards don't have the ability to do that. They can't generate easy baskets. And that was the case for Duquesne. They were more athletic. And when they needed to take guys, I'm not trying to name anyone specifically, but like Spencer Johnson off the dribble, they got layups. It's just that's what happens in the last 5 minutes of close basketball games. You've got to go ISO. You've got to be able to score. And good guards score. And that's why we say it's a tournament. The tournament is about guard play. That was a perfect example of it.
That was a super disappointing loss for the Cougs. Not all tournament losses are disappointing like that. Like if Utah State loses to TCU, I don't know if I'd call that disappointing.
Sure.
It would be a sense that Utah State had a great year, But, you know, TCU is a pretty good opponent and a pretty good opponent against Utah State. To your point, I don't think any of that was true about BYU and the Dukes. Now, we knew the Duquesne was going to come out. What were they going to do, Ben? They were going to play uber hard because they're playing for their retiring coach. So they were going to go out there and win one for the Gipper. Teams like that are old and disciplined. You knew they were going to guard and play, you know, play tough defense. And that should have that was all going to be true. You could have planning a plan on that going into the game, and BYU still should have won. And BYU didn't play well and still should have won.
Yep.
I mean, they erased big leads like four times during that game and should have been able to, you know, pull away. In my opinion, I think BYU kind of in a way beat themselves, but that's what adds to the disappointment factor. And let me add two things to that, Ben, because one, the team wasn't ready to play. Duquesne was ready to play. BYU was not ready to play. Now, Hance was talking to me yesterday about things like routine and the early game and disruption and all that stuff. And all that stuff is absolutely true and is a factor. You're playing in a weird gym. You know, what are the shot sight lines?
Sure.
You know, all those sorts of things are all true. But that's what the coaching staff's for.
Absolutely.
You've got to have the team ready to go. You know, what to pull a Gene Hackman and measure up and to the rim. You know, just 10 feet, guys. Just 10 feet like our gym back home in Hickory. Whatever. BYU was not ready to go. And then the Cougs somehow, Ben, do you think they didn't find another gear against Duquesne? Like, okay, the threes aren't falling, so we got to find another way to beat this team. Do you think that's not available to them, or do you think that they just couldn't find it?
No, I think they got rattled because they didn't make shots early. And they were like, oh, this is how it goes bad. This is the narrative of how it goes bad. And instead of finding out how to get easy shots, they started missing easy ones. Like Traore had some that rimmed out. And some of that's random. But when Ali Khalifa and Traore combined to go 4 of 18 from the floor, and those are your big guys that are supposed to be able to get you easy baskets. And I know Khalifa took 4 threes and missed all of them. But those are the big guys who have to get you easy baskets that Duquesne was able to rely on and BYU could not. That's how you end up losing games. Those guys also only combined for 6 rebounds. Like, that's the issue.
But I know that Foo's 4 of 12, and 12 is a big number in college. So I realize that. So maybe this criticism, you can argue against it. I still felt like times they just went away from him when he was the best answer to go get what you're talking about as an easy bucket. There was a play in the Jazz game last night. And not to we'll talk about the Jazz in a second, but Keontae George was really struggling. And did you see him run his face into a defender on one possession? And I'm trying to remember who was defending on the play. I can't remember, but all Keontae George did was get up ahead of steam, put down his head like Craig Ironhead Hayward, and run into the guy.
Yep.
And his whole point was just to draw a foul so he could go to the line and get a couple of buckets, see it go in, and be productive. Because yep. He wasn't shooting the ball very well. Like, I felt like, you know, if they're going to – they didn't give BYU an inch to shoot threes, and so you needed to go somewhere else. I still think that was Foos on the block. And, again, 4 of 12,
yep.
They gave him opportunities,
yep.
So maybe people would disagree with me. But when it's dry like that, or even at the beginning of the game, go to somebody who's going to give you an automatic bucket. And I don't think that's Khalifa. I think that's Foos.
Yep. I'm with you.
Right?
Absolutely. And BYU, again, their issue is they were a jump shooting team. And when jump shooting teams make shots, they can beat anybody. And when they don't, they can lose to anybody. And that's what happened.
Yep.
That's unfortunate. The other thing we talked about is how high-scoring wings can be deceptive in the tournament. Sometimes they can provide a little bit of false hope. And look, Jackson Robinson was awesome last night. I think he really boosted his draft stock. That's going to be the lasting memory. 5 of 11 from 3 was really the only BYU player who had any consistent rhythm, especially in the second half. But he had 25 points, and, yeah, they were able to go to him. He didn't get a shot off over the last 5 minutes, 7 minutes, something like that, despite the fact that he had it going.
He did enough.
Yeah, right. No, it's not on him.
Yeah,
right.
That's the
problem, though.
Plenty.
Like, it's hard to get some of those guys involved late in games because they don't bring the ball up. That's where, again, guard play is so important. And if Jackson Robinson is not bringing the ball up to get BYU into sets or just draw up his own shots, you lose games.
Yeah, they're going to have to figure out other ways to win ball games, I think, if they're going to want to ultimately be, you know, the Elite Eight team that Ben Anderson predicted.
He's going to slide that in there?
Next, that in. Sarah.
To be fair, I didn't have them there in my bracket.
Number 2, the Jazz fall to the Mavs.
Also not going to the Elite Eight, the Utah Jazz.
No. They lost to the Dallas Mavericks last night, Ben, 113-97 in a game. And I hate to say this, but I found it wholly uninteresting.
Yep, even though it was, what, a 9-point game going into the fourth quarter, or maybe it was 11, but regardless, it was like...
Oh, it was kind of close all night.
In the modern NBA, you think, well, you hit a couple of threes and this is a game. It never felt like a game. I mean, outside of the Jazz having a first quarter lead, it just really never felt like a game. And it was the same thing about it against Oklahoma City. They played hard. They kind of kept it close. But these teams late in the season are just trying to save their legs, even though Dallas dunked the ball 18 times. That's not exactly a leg-saving move. But they were just waiting till the end of the game to put it away, and they did.
4 of 30 is what the Jazz shot from 3, which is just dreadful. Lauri Markkanen has not shot the ball well lately, and last night was not an exception. He was 1 for 9 for 3. But I hardly felt like Dallas was even trying. You know, if I'm Will Hardy, I'm pretty bent out of shape about 10 dunks. 10 of 11 from Daniel Gafford?
Yep.
I mean, that's...
Double-digit dunks.
That's embarrassing.
And I like Daniel Gafford. We've talked about him a little bit on the
show. I like him too, but you can't let anybody dunk on you 10 times. That's crazy.
Well, there was some lack of pride last night because Dallas, for the most part of the second half, was just running a layup line, right? I mean, it was just every time you looked up, it was a lob. They were running down the floor and getting easy baskets. It was just over and over and over attacking the paint. 62 points in the paint for the Mavericks. Yes, the Jazz had 60, but they were much louder points for Dallas.
Well, but Dallas doesn't pretend to play defense either.
Like I said, the worst defense in the NBA since the All-Star break?
Yeah.
I had thought maybe they were playing better. They weren't. Fast break points, 27 for Dallas, 12 of 14. So you've got a, what, 2.1, 2.2 point per possession? Or no, just under, because they had 14 possessions, excuse me. Just under 2 points per possession in transition, meaning it's truly a layup line. Nobody's playing defense in that situation.
The Jazz gave up a dunk in transition because one player was saying "my bad" to another player? Did you see that one?
A lot of "my bads" on this team, because there's a lot of bads on that team. I mean, the Jazz just aren't – the Jazz really have – I felt it last night, and again, I know it was close. It really feels like they've let go of the rope on the entire season.
Oh, it's because they have.
And I don't know if I got there last year. I think at times, like obviously late in the season when they were playing Luka Šamanić, they were playing all these guys late. Ochai Agbaji was really trying. Ochai Agbaji was really going out there and giving his all. And look, Bryce Sensabaugh was really playing hard last night. But this team, even with guys that are going to be in the rotation next year, which for the most part the last 10 games of the season last year didn't feature that, didn't let go of the rope as much as this roster.
Listen,
has.
There's more nuance in life to even a phrase like let go of the rope. Because the Jazz did play hard at times last night. But you know what? They're the second night on a back-to-back, and they're playing against the Mavericks, who are tough to guard to begin with. And you know what? The defensive effort wasn't where it needed to be. I don't think that means that they're going to stop trying in every game. But it does mean, like, the team is no longer interested in winning games. In fact, they're incentivized to lose games. And so does that have a trickle-down effect on the players in the locker room? 1,000%. Of course it does.
I asked you this 2 weeks ago, and you refused to answer. How many more wins does the Jazz get the rest of the year? They have 12 games left.
I don't know. I still, it's impossible. It's impossible to say. But I'll tell you this. It's not going to be many.
It's going to be...
Because they're trying to lose.
Yeah, two
so
or fewer.
So it's not going to
I'm
be...
I'm going to say two or fewer.
It's not going to be many.
Yep.
But never underestimate the other team's willingness to try and lose.
Yeah, we'll see.
Does Houston try and lose
Houston's
against the Jazz tomorrow
night?
Houston's
won 9 of 10. Houston's won 9 of 10. I think they have the longest streak in the NBA. They've won 7 in a row.
I know, but they're dumb. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't be trying to lose. Maybe they come to their senses.
They're going to win by 30.
Şengün's out.
Şengün's out, but Jalen Green has turned into a superstar in the NBA all of a sudden. So
I don't know.
Watch for Jalen Green tomorrow night. It's the last we'll talk about the Jazz today.
All right, what's next?
Number 3, the madness continues.
Well, Kentucky has to fire Coach Calipari, right? Don't
no,
you have to?
They cannot.
Well, what do you mean they cannot?
Did you see his buyout?
Who cares? It's Kentucky basketball. You got to start winning games. Look, they're paying these players. They're paying that roster more than they're paying Coach Calipari. You're losing with that roster, with that type of salary. Yeah, you got to fire the coach if he can't get it done. Because you're paying those guys to come back next year.
I mean, that's easy enough for you to say, Ben, but they have to write a check for $30 million.
Fine.
$33 million just to say goodbye
Fine.
To him.
Go drum up a Kentucky oil baron.
But you know that's like 60% of their yearly television payout, right?
Sure.
Just to pay a coach to go away, that doesn't make it good business. And it goes down if you let him stay another year Every year you let him stay, it goes down.
Yeah, I think you got to get rid of him. I think you got to bite the bullet and you got to move on. Now, I don't know who the awesome coach is you go out and hire. I don't know who the obvious name is. Somewhat ironically, had BYU maybe won more games, I think Mark Pope really could have been in that conversation and still could. But, yeah, man, my goodness. Paying Coach Calipari, who doesn't know how to draw up an offense to beat a zone defense, no idea. You've got the best freshman backcourt in the country.
But don't
you've got Rob Dillingham. And you have Reed Shepard, who are both going to be top 10 picks and maybe top 5 picks. They combined for like 7 points. It was one of the worst coaching performances I've ever seen. And that's already been the MO for Coach Calipari.
That's what I'm saying. That's always been true. And he's found ways to win at a high level. Maybe not as much as people like, obviously, you expect. And
one
I can't believe I'm defending Coach Calipari.
One win in the
Calipari.
Last 5 years. He's gotten worse.
But he didn't forget how to coach. That's my point.
He's never known.
Well, he's never been good like that.
But at least they would win tournament games. At least they were safe to get to the Sweet 16 most years. Now they can't even get out of the first round.
Well, because
it's a joke.
The landscape has changed. And now
then the coach got to change.
Well, I wonder if the game plan for him changes. Listen, I'm not going to defend Coach Calipari.
I don't think he's been a good coach for a long time. Go sit in your car for the next segment.
But I mean, just to spend somebody else's $33 million is so easy.
Well, it's really easy for me to do. I do it all the time.
It's their fault for signing him to that contract, too. I get it. But the truth is that these teams, they lost to a team that is full of 25-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know, and with the transfer portal, and maybe this is a byproduct that I didn't really see coming, maybe the best teams in college basketball are the teams that assemble a bunch of 25-year-olds instead of a bunch of 19-year-olds.
Oh, look,
because the one and done isn't going to be automatically you have the best team anymore.
And there's a reason nobody does this, because clearly it's hard to replicate, because I'm not the only person who's thought of it. But, like, yeah, why doesn't a Utah just say, well, we're going to take the Creighton approach, we're going to take the Dayton approach, we're going to take the Oakland approach, and get a bunch of these 6'3" guys. And look, they've had them, Nick Jacobson, you know, that we've seen these guys succeed locally in the past. But, like, yeah, just fill out your roster with these try-hard dudes and see if that gets you somewhere, because the 6'8" guys who don't know how to play aren't helping you. But some of these 6'3", 6'4" guys, Duquesne had a bunch of them who just know how to play. And look, Duquesne has two tournament trips in the last 50 years or whatever it was. It's not like they're
the type of team. But like UConn isn't necessarily a one-and-done destination.
No, they have some, but no, it's not been their only thing. So, yeah, good for Oakland. They're the story in the goal key kid who has the funniest shot chart I've ever seen in college basketball history. I had stunned, and then I realized a bunch of people had tweeted this out, so I apologize. 97% of his field goal attempts this year were threes.
Yeah, all threes.
Because I looked at his field goal percentage.
He shot
37% from the floor, and I was like, what? How does that guy, who's that sharp of a shooter, shoot 37% from the floor? Because he only shoots threes, and 37% from three is pretty good. And he takes 9 a game.
We're live. JCW's in Harriman. Come see us. Tournament game's going. We've got TVs everywhere. You can watch the games and enjoy delicious food. In fact, I'm going to go order something, I think, during the break. But come see us. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love. The teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jacob Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. It's our 50th segment brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology in doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows.
Shout out to our engineer down here, Sean, who's watching the wrong game. He's watching Florida Atlantic Northwestern, which has a combined 32 points in the opening 18 minutes of the game.
18-14.
No, technically it's closer than the Baylor Colgate game, which is 23-12. But right now, Northwestern and FAU are a combined, 12 of 46 from the floor. So they're shooting below 28%. They're 2 of 20 from the 3-point line, so they're shooting like the Jazz last night. They have, 14 turnovers to 12 made baskets. 14 turnovers to 12 made baskets combined.
That ain't good, Ben.
No, this looks like the Virginia Volunteers?
Cavaliers.
Cavaliers. Why am I thinking Volunteers?
Tennessee.
Virginia Cavaliers facing the Virginia Cavaliers in the opening round of this matchup.
I do have Tennessee winning it all, and they looked really good yesterday.
Yeah, they did. Don't connect. Cooking.
So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
I couldn't – I know you and everybody else has UConn, Ben. I wonder how many people lost Kentucky.
A lot. I didn't have Kentucky going that far. Again, no, I mean, losing to the Texas Tech.
As a champion. Because there's tons of people that just pick them random, like, because they've heard of them, right?
And because, again, their star backcourt. I mean, Reed Shepard was maybe the most talked about player in college basketball this year. There's a couple of guys out there, but, like, he's this dynamo that had the worst game probably of his career, not just of his college career, probably that he's ever played at any level ever, and had it yesterday.
Have you ever lost a champion on day one?
I wonder if maybe, speaking of my beloved Cavalier Volunteers, picked Virginia when they lost as the one seed. I wonder if I did that a couple of years ago.
Of course you did. I'm trying to, let's see here. What was Chris Paul's last year at Wake Forest?
At Wake?
Because I picked them to win it all, and they either lost in the first or the second round. I can't.
Was it? I mean, I remember he punched Julius Hodge in the groin, but I don't think that was that game. That was earlier in the season.
He was, and speaking of NC State, right, Julius Hodge?
Yep. Feisty. Feisty Chris Paul.
Seriously. But anyway, that year might have been the closest. It was like, I thought Chris Paul was it. It's like, there they go.
There's the guard play.
There's the dude.
And Wake Forest is not a bad basketball program.
They're a little up and down. They weren't at the time, right?
Good players. Good NBA players. It's a good NBA program.
I don't know why I can't find it. But anyway, that team totally let me down. Thanks a lot. They were a two seed that year.
I've probably had some Duke teams going far. I've probably had some UNC teams going far that have been bounced relatively early. In fact, last year, didn't Duke get bounced really early?
Yeah, they did.
I may have had Duke win it all last year.
That might have been it. Yeah, because that's really debilitating when you lose it on day one, right?
It really makes you lose interest in your bracket.
Really, it's like, oh, really? First day and the champion is out?
How about Oregon? Oregon's cooking, man. Not that they really apply to us locally all that much anymore. I don't think we're going to talk a ton of Oregon sports going forward. Maybe just as we track the teams that went to the Big Ten, though I think we're more going to celebrate the downfall of USC, at least the expected downfall of USC. But Oregon, look, they're cooking. They've got Mike Creighton playing in the second round, and that's going to be a dangerous game. I could lose a championship contender in my championship bracket if Creighton goes down tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Okay. They lost to West Virginia. This was the second round, though. Okay. So they made it past the first. Way to go, Chris Paul. You stink. All right. We'll have more coming up next. Jake and Ben. Scotty G is going to jump on the show. Coming up at 11:30, so we'll talk a little Utah State. They've got a tough one coming up against TCU. They play in the second-to-last game of the first round, so they don't play until tonight. Don't miss your chance to win big every week on the KSL Sports Zone. This week on Win Ticket Wednesday, you can win a pair of tickets to go see A Day to Remember at Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater on July the 21st. Listen to the zone all day on Wednesday for your chance to win. More Jake and Ben coming up next, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Than us.
No!
Your home for the best sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga.
I can't stop this feeling.
Ooga, ooga, ooga,
deep inside of me.
Ooga shaka, ooga, ooga,
girl, you just.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone, live from JCW's here in Harriman. Come watch the tournament with us. We want to remind you to nominate the sports volunteer that you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contest and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. Got a bunch of people starting to file in, Ben, starting to watch games, grab grub as the lunch hour draws near. We'd encourage you to come on out and see us here at JCW's in Harriman. I just got my burger, Ben. It'd be nice if you talked this whole segment.
Did you go with the classic?
You know what? I decided to go with the pastrami today.
How is it?
How do you think it is?
Unreal. It looks good.
It's so good. And I went with the onion rings today, which was, I think, a good decision.
I might have to steal an onion ring from you. I'll trade you some fries for some onion rings.
Help yourself. Yeah.
I ordered the fish and chips. They're coming out soon. I can't wait.
I know you're excited.
Very.
But the food's great. If you've never been to JCW's, trust me, the food's fantastic. If you have, well, then you already know.
It was really funny to see Hans walk in yesterday and the entire restaurant turn its attention to Hans Olsen standing in the back corner. Now, he is uniquely tall and uniquely large, so he stands out. But the fact that we were in American Fork in Utah County, where he is royalty, it was pretty interesting to see that. That place was packed.
How much food did Hans end up putting down yesterday? A double pastrami burger? Oh, that's modest for our guy Hans. Way to go, Hans. Way to show
a little
restraint.
One and a half hot dogs.
Way to go, Christian. All right, Ben, let's talk some NCAA tournament, and we'll talk some BYU here in a second, and then we're going to talk to Scotty G at 11:30 about the Aggies and their matchup against TCU, so stay tuned for that. But we've been following this story, Ben, and the I can't believe the latest to this Dan Monson story, the coach at Long Beach State.
Okay.
All right. So if you haven't been following, Long Beach State fired Dan after the regular season.
Right. Been there for 17 years, right?
Yep. Was at Gonzaga before that. He was the first kind of run there at Gonzaga in the late 90s. He was the coach. He left to take Coach Lacombe told me, the Minnesota job, and then it didn't work out, and he ended up in Long Beach State for 17 years. So he's fired after the regular season. The AD, whose name is Bobby Smitherin.
Okay.
Yeah. Old Bobby.
Okay, Bobby.
Old Bobby Smitherin, he fired Dan and then told him, like, okay, go ahead and coach in the conference tournament or whatever. I don't want to be bothered with an interim coach or whatever. Just go ahead and do it. 17 years, thanks for the service. Which, first of all, makes no sense to me. Just wait another week
just
and fire
wait a week.
Him there.
Yeah, who cares?
Makes zero sense. But old Bobby decided, nope, going to fire Dan. Then Dan goes out and wins the Big West tournament. Just to stick it in Bobby's ear. And then they lost yesterday, right? They were let me see. I can get their final score up. But anyway, Long Beach State, they're out of it. And they were a great story. They lost Arizona, that's right, 85-65. But before the game, a reporter, ESPN, I believe, caught up with old Bobby Smitherin to ask him about firing the coach and then really looking bad, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, of course. It's been the conversation until old Golkey took over at Oakland yesterday. That was the talk of the tournament.
So here's Bobby's quote, and I could see Ben doing this for sure. Bobby says, quote, "My belief and hope is that by doing what I did and the timing of it, they would play inspired. And that's what they did. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but it worked." Unquote.
Monty Burns. I told him to do that.
I told him to do that. You know, really, I'm thinking I'm playing three-dimensional chess while you guys are playing checkers. I thought it would galvanize the team, and it did. So, you're welcome.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
Unbelievably stupid. Maybe the dumbest quote, and so lacks so much tact, right? Like, just be like, hey man, we're along for the ride too. We love this coach. We love everything he's done for our program. We couldn't think of a better way to go out. This is awesome. He deserves this. Not, I deserve this. I created this. Some athletic directors, I swear, this is as bad as it gets. This is unbelievable.
Can I give you my speculation about why all this happened the way that it did? Is that Long Beach State's athletic department is probably so terribly run, they have a huge budget crunch. And keeping the head basketball coach on for an extra week is actually a problem. So he wanted to save the salary and save the benefits because his budget is all out of whack. But anyway, Ben, you're right. The correct answer, because he's probably embarrassed because he looks bad on a national level. Everybody, you know, his phone's probably blowing up with people calling him an idiot. Way to go, buffoon. You look really terrible. And instead of doing what you said and just say, oh, we're so happy for Coach. He's done a great job here for a long time. This is the swan song that he deserves. And you can even add, we're still confident in our decision and the direction of the program. We felt there was a need for the change, and these wins do really nothing to affect that other than we're happy for Coach and his success, and specifically these group of players who are such great students. It's pretty easy.
It writes itself. We're in awe of the storybook ending to his wonderful career here. Not, I did this. Look at how good I am.
You're welcome.
Unbelievable.
Isn't that the – did you ever do group – projects in college, I'm sure you did, like group papers or whatever, and there was always the one person who did all the work, a couple people that kind of participated, and then the person that that just sat there.
Yeah,
and usually I was the guy who just sat there.
There was one group project where I was the sat there guy, because I generally tried to not be that guy, but it was in my science class, and we were doing a thing on Aurora Borealis, and we had, like, kind of assigned things, and I had a thing to do, and then I was going to put the whole project together. And, like, the other people did their job so well that I didn't have to do much other than just, like, copy and paste it into one five-page worksheet. I didn't really have to write anything, and they all gave me really bad grades.
See, I think there actually is some value to just sit there, because there's too many cooks in the kitchen on those projects and too many conflicting opinions and all that sort of stuff. And sometimes the just sit there guy is really good, because you can just kind of sit there and not cause any problems. But you know what you don't get to do as just sit there guy?
And then take credit.
Is you don't get to stand in front of the group and take credit. Now, you can stand in the back and take your C-plus or whatever and move on. But you can't go up to the professor and be like, I nailed this project. The rest of these folks, they really were just dead weight.
NBA player needs to take 10 shots a game, 15 you know shots what I mean? A game. Be like, the 2 shots a game guy. But then don't be like, I carried this roster.
But you're the AD, all right? You were not this is happening in spite of you, not because of you. You don't get to stand up and take credit. You have to sit in the back and be the just stand there guy.
You, Strawberry, hit a home run.
Okay, Skip.
I told him to do that.
I'm so happy you just pulled that. It is one of the great clips, and it's so applicable to coaching in so many ways. You, Strawberry, go hit a home run. I mean, you want to know how Coach Cal won his only NCAA tournament title? Because he could say, you, Davis, go dunk that basketball.
Go and block 15 shots.
That's how he's made a career. He came onto the scene at UMass, right? You, who was his big guy? Marcus Camby. You, Camby, go block that shot.
Derrick Rose.
I told him to do that. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's his whole career.
Yep, it is.
Now, also, it's basically all a whole Phil Jackson's whole career, too. Like, there are a lot of coaches that have made a lot of money based on taking credit for things that good players do. And not to say that coaches are worthless, because that's not true either, but coaches like John Calipari might as well be worthless.
Absolutely.
And they're not coaching anything.
And there's the thing. There's a huge thing about, you know, not every coaching has to be I draw up the best plays. We think about that, and we can look at, like, after timeout
plays
and stuff like
that. But that's not 100% of the job.
It's recruiting, and then you know what? Beyond the recruiting is it's buy-in. It's getting those kids that actually, once you get them on campus, to listen to what you're saying and what the team is doing as a group, even if it's not running the most intricate offense of all time or playing the most intricate defense. It's about guys buying in, and the guys don't even seem bought in at Kentucky anymore. Because what did Coach Cal keep saying? We're built for March. We're built for March. We're built for March. What does that mean? It means we weren't good during the regular season.
Stunk in January.
But we think it'll randomly fix itself in March. And then when it doesn't, you have to think, oh, we weren't built for anything.
Oh.
We were a team. We are there is a roster of players, but no one was bought into doing anything together.
Is it possible, Ben, and this is kind of a right turn, I apologize, but now you've got me thinking, is it possible that Bill Belichick was the ultimate you, Strawberry, go hit a home run coach of all time?
There is always a question of that when
you
have
Brady,
great players.
Go win that football game.
Hey, you know what? We are a little bit there with Quinn Snyder. And I think Quinn's a good coach. I do. I think he had immense buy-in. I do think the players really bought into what he was saying, and maybe that was his best his best strength. But, like, you know what? Donovan Mitchell's a really good player. Rudy Gobert is a really good player, and it doesn't matter that they're playing for J.B. Bickerstaff, who, by the way, is a pretty questionable head coach, and Chris Finch, who's a pretty good head coach, but we'll have to see if he can do anything when they actually get to the playoffs. And they're still very good. It's like, yeah, they're still great. And Quinn is out there telling DeJounte Murray, go do this. And they're not doing it that well. You know, they're just not that good of a team. In fact, they probably underachieved with this roster this year, understanding that Trae Young is unhealthy. So that's always the flaw with coaching when you have great talent. The coach gets a lot of credit when
the
job's not that hard.
You know what's funny is smart coaches are looking for that, though. Why do you think James Harden got all the – so this is always my example because it's so funny. Mike D'Antoni made his whole reputation on up-tempo, move the ball. That was his whole thing. Steve Nash, they ran – they had more possessions when that wasn't necessarily a popular thing. That was his style. He brought it from Europe. He not only did it with Phoenix, but he did it with other teams too, or at least tried to. Mm-hmm. Then he gets to Houston. And he's got Jimmy Harden. And Jimmy doesn't want to play fast.
Right.
Jimmy doesn't want to move the ball.
Jimmy
doesn't want to do any of that.
Again, we're talking about James Harden. We're abbreviating to Jimmy.
So what happens? What happens to Mike D'Antoni and his system?
Out the window.
We're not going to do that anymore. Yeah. Yeah, I know. I've been doing that my old career, but no longer, because Jimmy doesn't want to run. So we're not going to do that, and we're going to do something else. You know what we're going to do? We're going to give Jimmy the ball the whole game. Why are you going to do that, Coach? Because it's really easy to say, you, Jimmy, go make that shot.
Yep. Hit that step back three.
I mean, people want to say that Houston team was one injury or one game or whatever away from beating Golden State and winning the NBA title, blah, blah, blah. They weren't that close because of the coach. I'll tell you that.
Sure.
That he wasn't doing anything.
No, absolutely right.
I think it led to the downfall of that Rockets team, me personally. But he didn't do anything. He said, James Harden, go, Jimmy, go shoot.
And maybe the best thing coaches can do is find a way to mask the team's weaknesses. You know what I mean? You just get out of the way of your strength, and you find a way to mask your weaknesses. And a lot of the coaches never find a way to mask those weaknesses.
I think there are a few things that coaches really can have an impact on, and this can come back to our BYU discussion. You have to have your team ready to go. That is a coach's responsibility. You know, because the best player, you know, John Stockton didn't need any help being ready to go, probably on those Jazz teams. Karl Malone probably didn't need any help being ready to go. But you know what? Shandon Anderson and Brian Russell and all these other players, they needed to be ready to go, meaning they needed to know their role. They needed a game plan. They needed to know what they were going to do defensively. They needed to be in the right place emotionally. They needed to be rested and fed and all these other things that I do think a head coach can have a real impact on. It's easier to have a good game, Ben, you know this, when you're comfortable with the game plan. And that doesn't mean anything to John and Carl, but that means a lot to Antoine Carr.
Yep.
At that particular time. So that is one place.
And to our point, Jerry was not an X's and O's guy. It was not what he did.
No, it's not.
He was not an X's and O's
guy. He ran the same stuff all the time.
Yep. They had offense from Phil Johnson, they had defense from Gordy Chiesa, and they had Jerry getting everyone to buy in.
Simple formula.
It worked. Yep.
Very, very simple formula. Then I think game management stuff coaches absolutely can be good at, and that matters. What are your rotations? What players are you putting together? When are you making the subs? When are you calling timeouts? What do you do with other teams' runs? You know, those things I think all matter. But I think you're right. I think most of the best coaches, when it comes to their players, sometimes just get out of the way. Like, put them in a good spot, get them in a good set, and let your good players go to work. So it's such a subtle thing. But it's the reason that I think bad X's and O's coaches or bad management coaches or whatever, like John Calipari, can be considered a legend, because you can throw all that out the window because recruiting can erase all of it.
Yeah, it does. That masks everything.
That can mask everything. Stu Morrow might have been the best coach in college basketball. And I'm just picking Stu because he decided to stay at a small school. And you'd never know it because he was comfortable living in Logan.
Right. Rick was truly a great coach. A great X's and O's guy, knew how to pull out strategies, et cetera, et cetera. Rick Majerus was. It also helped when he got his most talent and kind of let Keith Van Horn be Keith Van Horn, let Andre Miller run the show.
Yeah, but, man, he was so structured, even with those guys. But, Rick, hey, he was an outside-the-box thinker. He thought, if this team hates me with the fire and passion of a thousand suns,
we'll galvanize them.
They will play really hard just to stick it in my face.
It kind of sounds like the Long Beach State Athletic
and
Director.
You know what they don't know is that I'll take credit for all of it.
I'm going to take credit at the end. I told him to do that.
Oh, it's so true. It is so true. I'm not trying to diminish, you know, the career of coaching, but, man, we had a I think I've told you this story, Ben, but when I was playing Skyline Tennis and I was a freshman and sophomore, our top three players were the best players in the Intermountain region. Not even the best players in the state. Like, they were absolutely incredible. We won state. I don't even think we lost a match. Like, I mean, we just dominated, and our coach that year won Coach of the Year, and he gave the best quote to the newspaper. I wish I could remember exactly what it was, but he was like, you know, I don't really deserve this award. Some years where you get the recognition, you do the least amount of work. That's what he said. He was like, "What? I've got the best three players in the Intermountain region. They didn't lose a set all year. I just rolled them out. I didn't do anything."
Hey, this happened locally in sports radio. We've talked about this a little bit before, but like – And look, credit, there are really talented people here. And, you know, David Locke's extremely talented, and Ian Furness is extremely talented, and there were a lot of people. But 1997, 1998, when we're really tracking ratings hard in sports radio, everyone starts looking at Utah and saying, like,
whoa, what's going on?
What's going on in Utah? They must have some geniuses working in that market. All of a sudden, their ratings are through the roof on all these sports radio stations when it was still kind of in its infancy. We got to go raid that market of its talent. Well, what also happened in 1997, 1998? The Utes went to the Final Four and the Jazz went to back-to-back finals. Of course everyone wanted to listen to sports radio. And look, those guys have gone on to have great careers. But, that was a very much, I told them to do that.
I told them to do that. You, Van Horn, go make a bucket.
Hit a buzzer beater.
I told him to do that. All right, stay tuned. We'll have more Jake and Ben coming up next. Scotty G is going to join us from Indianapolis. We're live here at JCW's in Harriman. Come see us. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
What's that?
Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Time to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3,
on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson, live from JCW's here in Harriman. Come see us, watch the games, get some food.
Man, get some food. Holy cow.
Ben's diving into the fish and chips. We've got college, obviously NCAA tournament basketball going on right now, Ben. Northwestern leads Florida Atlantic 28-27.
4-6.
Listen, the loser of this game should be required to quit basketball.
You don't get to play anymore.
Baylor leads Colgate 54-34.
Showing from Baylor.
About to tip off. UAB is taking on San Diego State.
You know what I can say about JCWs? You ever like sit at work and you're like craving food? Like you have an idea of like, oh, you know what hits me? You know what I'd really like to try? Whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is. God, like a burger or a
sandwich, a
pastrami
salad.
Burger, fish and chips, chicken strips, whatever it is. When you go to JCW's, A, not only do they have it, B, it tastes exactly like what your craving wanted it to taste like. You're like, man, I could go for some good fries or an ice-cold soda right now or whatever it is you're looking for, and it's going to taste exactly like you want it to.
It's really good.
It's so good.
Utah State takes on TCU tonight in a 9-8 matchup. The game is going to tip off around 7:55, could be a little later depending on scheduling. Joining us now, the voice of the Utah State Aggies. Of course, you hear him on the station every day from noon to 3 as well. The one and only Scott Girard. What's up, Scotty G?
You know, there's nothing better than getting a burger at JCW's, getting cheese fries. There was an establishment that had a world-famous dipping sauce. This is the dipping sauce at JCW's is better, in my opinion. and just drenching those fries in that stuff, getting a shake that's as big as somebody's head. I mean, come on, let's go. Let's do this, right?
Can I ask you, though, did you do the steakhouse that all the NBA players go into in Indiana last night? I know you are not afraid to try a nice meal on the road. Did you go to the steakhouse?
You're referring to St. Elmo's. And, Ben, I am ashamed to admit that, yes, not only did I go last night, but I also went on Wednesday night, too.
Oh, good for you. Well, tell me about it, because like there's like three or four restaurants in the NBA where like everybody goes when they're in town. That's the one I think,
and by the way,
gets talked about the most.
Valters is on that list too, I think.
It absolutely is. And there's another one in Atlanta that we can't talk about.
Yeah, yeah. but St. Elmo's is I'd been there before about it's probably been about 10 or 11 years ago. And I was like, oh, that's a really, you know, it was good. And then I got invited with a group on Wednesday night, went. I was planning. I made a reservation for last night and then got a cool little invite to go on Wednesday night. So I'm like, well, geez, I'll knock it out. The bone-in ribeye is single-handedly the best steak I've ever had in my life. Huh. And I don't like being the guy that says, oh, this is the best ever, blah, blah, blah. But it is. It just is. It's absolutely incredible. But to top it off, it's not just the steak. They have a shrimp cocktail that will blow your sinuses into the next zip code. Like, they put like shaved horseradish in it. It's not the most appealing looking thing when you get into it, but that horseradish sauce will just destroy you in one of the most perfect ways possible. It is incredible.
Scotty, what did Utah State due to the selection committee to deserve such a tough matchup in the first round for a Utah State team that won the dang league? I know we've been complaining about this all week, but I just can't get over it. Win the Mountain West, a good league, win it outright, and you get TCU in the first round for your reward. It's brutal.
Well, I did the mock selection committee about a decade ago. In fact, that's when I last went to St. Elmo's, and I remember the committee chair at the time was telling all of us media honks out there, and he said, hey, we want all of you to know as we bring you into this process, we do not take past performances into consideration. We do not take tradition into consideration when we're seeding these teams. And we all laughed at him then, and you laugh at him now, because the Mountain West traditionally does not do well in the NCAA tournament. There have been multiple bids many times, obviously never six. And so what the committee not only told Utah State but told the rest of the Mountain West Conference outside of San Diego State, San Diego State has the same seed in the NCAA tournament as they had in the Mountain West Conference tournament, a 5 seed. And yet here they are again in the NCAA as a 5 seed, which shows you that the committee was like, okay, you know what? Everybody not named San Diego State, we're going to let you in. You get your cake, but you don't get to eat it. So we'll give you your 6 teams that you've been barking about, but we're going to give you a horrible seeds across the board, which Colorado State should not have been an at-large, or should not have been a play-in team. Boise State should not have been a play-in team. Nevada should have been a little bit higher. Like, those are seeds that should not have been where they were. But yet, because of past performance, which hasn't been great, and as of right now isn't great again with Boise losing and Nevada having a complete meltdown and Colorado State looking dreadful for the most part against Texas. I understand it. I get it. But doesn't mean you have to like it. And Utah State has not won an NCAA tournament game since 2001. They've lost 10 straight opening round games that they'll try to snap tonight. So, again, I understand it. I don't like it. I think Utah State should have deserved a higher seed. I think their body of work deserved at least a 6 or a 7 seed. But they'll take the 8 and they'll go with it. I wish that they were playing Northwestern in that 8-9 game instead of what they have tonight in TCU watching this Northwestern game. But here we are.
What because there's the 10 or the 0-10 streak now for Utah State, but because it's spread over a few coaches and it's kind of become a hotbed for coaches to come in and find great new jobs after that, what type of pressure is there for Utah State to win this game? Does it feel like you have to get a win here if you're Utah State as a program?
A little bit. I think if I were to ask Danny Sprinkle that, he would say no. But I do think that there's pressure on the program to try to find a way to get a win, especially when you're wearing your home whites, meaning you're a top eight seed. Like, you know, those are games you need to win. When you come in as an 11 or a 12, and most of those games that Utah State played in this 10-game losing streak, they were an 11, a 12, a 13. There were a couple of 15s in there that you're just not going to win those games more often than not. It's just not going to happen. But when you're an 8 seed, you got to play better. And Utah State was an 8 seed in Sam Merrill's junior year, and they got ran off the court by Washington and Matisse Thybulle. And that can't happen tonight. Utah State's got to be better. They've got to be, they've got to hang in there with that TCU team. And they just, you know, the last three games they played, they've lost those games going away in the tournament. And tonight is a night that Utah State, I'm not saying they need to win this game, but they need to have a good showing. They need to play well. I think they will. They're a confident bunch. Being around them the last couple days, it seems like they're fairly confident in what they can do and how they can handle this game tonight. But they need a good showing tonight, not just for themselves, but to show the rest of the country that Utah State can hang with anybody.
You mentioned that Utah State hasn't won since 2001, and not necessarily to go down this road, but I see all this stuff. It's the four-year anniversary of the pandemic and the reaction to it, and, of course, that happened right around conference tournament time and canceled the NCAA tournament. And it's really too bad, it's particularly for Utah State, because they just won the Mountain West Conference tournament. But they had two NBA guys in Nimi Keita and Sam Merrill, and they were going to have a chance to make some waves in the NCAA tournament. So let me ask you, Scotty, someone who saw all those games that year, does that team win at least one game if that tournament was played?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously it depends on the matchup, but I have little doubt in my mind that team, the way they were playing at that time, had every capability of being a Sweet 16 team, 1,000%. And I'll throw BYU in the mix. BYU was playing great basketball as well going into that thing. I think both those teams had a chance to be Sweet 16. That's one of the bigger what-ifs in Utah sports history in terms of if that pandemic doesn't hit, what that NCAA tournament would have looked like for in-state, you know, for Utah State and BYU. It's just a crying shame. And the old adage is, to make a run in the NBA or in the NCAA tournament, for the most part, you need two NBA guys. And Utah State had that in Nimi and Sam Merrill. And a fringe guy who spent a good amount of time in the G League, and Justin Bean, who was starting to figure things out as a college basketball player, too. So, I mean, you had a lot of, you know, you had a ton of talent on that team. Namish Keita had that knee injury. He was finally healthy and playing how we expected him to play. Sam was playing out of his mind. And, yeah, I mean, it's just a crying shame that team didn't have a chance to go into the tournament.
Scotty, we appreciate you. We will be listening tonight. What time would you guess tip-off will actually be? I know it's scheduled for 7:55, but it'll probably be, 8:15?
Yeah, but the game before it is the Purdue 16-1 game. So I would assume Purdue will probably mop the floor with whatever group
that'll
of shoe clerks
are
playing as the 16 seed. So so I got to imagine that they'll – by the way, I stole that line from you. I've used that line for so many years.
I know. I love
you.
It still. It's so good.
But no offense to any shoe clerks out there. But, yeah, I
fine
think
profession.
Utah – I think it'll be 7:55, maybe a little bit later, but for the most part, we should be able to start on time. We'll have a little bit of an earlier start time on the pregame. We'll start about 7:15. I got interviews with Andy Hill, the assistant coach, obviously Danny Sprinkle, some of the players as well. So we'll have it all ready for you from top to bottom, man. We're going to blow it up and have a good time tonight and hopefully do it again on Sunday.
Thank you, Scotty G. You're the best.
Have a good call, Scotty. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate it, guys. A vanilla-based caramel shake with cookie dough in it for me.
Ooh, that
sounds
like
Hands likes the chocolate base. I'm more of a vanilla base kind of guy, but Hands goes chocolate. I prefer the vanilla ice cream for my shake base.
Yeah, well, what does Hands know? I agree with you, Scotty. Team Vanilla.
Hands knows a lot, actually, when it comes to that place.
when it comes to food and shakes.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Scotty. You're the best.
You got it.
The great Scotty G, voice of the Utah State Aggies, and, of course, here from noon to 3 right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Live at JCW's, we'll update you on all the scores going on in the NCAA tournament and get you ready for Hanson
Scotty
G. We'll update
you on how good this food is.
Coming up next, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
You don't sense the urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jacob Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. This one of the 50 segment brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows. Peach Doors and Windows is Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows. Ben, want to also remind the good folks about Win Ticket Wednesday. Is that what we're doing here, Sarah? Nickelback, that's right.
Win tickets to see Nickelback.
Yeah, right. Get an in-depth look at the ups and downs of Nickelback's roller coaster career when Hate to Love Nickelback comes to the big screen for 2 days, March 27th and 30th. Book tickets now at nickelbackfilm.com or visit kslsports.com to enter to win tickets to a screening near you. Apologies to Sarah, but you could see where I got confused there. I was thinking band tickets.
I mean, I did say Nickelback twice.
Several times, yeah, but that didn't sink in.
Doesn't resonate, Sarah.
You're going into a food coma. It's okay. I get it.
He is.
It was quite good. All right, Northwestern up on Florida Atlantic, 50-43. The scoring has come at a quicker pace here in the second half.
They're figuring it out.
Baylor is smoking Colgate, 57-40, 17
no,
minutes left
No, you brush
to go.
Your teeth with Colgate. You don't smoke Colgate, Jake.
Oh, good one, Ben. Well done. And then San Diego State leads UAB 11-9. That game obviously just underway. Coming up at noon, 15-seed Western Kentucky, the Hilltoppers, will take on 2-seed Marquette. Is there one game today that are particularly looking for? I think most people would say Grand Canyon St. Mary's.
Everybody That's kind of the big one.
A good one. Nebraska, Texas A&M is interesting because the AD at Nebraska just left to take the AD job at Texas A&M.
Yeah.
So that's kind of funny.
Colorado,
Florida should be good.
Clemson, New Mexico. A lot of people have New Mexico as the upset there, including myself.
Oh, I'd love to see the Mountain West win, but I just don't know. What do you think about that question that I asked Michelle about, that every unit that the Pac-12 gets in this tournament goes right to Washington State and Oregon State?
Good for them, man. You got to find some way to survive, and they're going to need money, and this is a good way to get it. They're not going to make up the money they lose by not being in a power conference. They're just not. I don't see how that would happen in the future. Even if they're able to reform the Pac-10 in some sense with Mountain West Conference schools, it seemed like the low end of the P5 conferences, even when you had Washington and USC and UCLA and Oregon. They're not going to be able to rebuild that by bringing in San Diego State and Utah State and Colorado State and whoever, the Boise State. They're never going to get back to that money. So every penny they can get now is going to be important.
Yeah, but they're going to have like hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank. So you say maybe they won't be able to make up the money they would have gotten elsewhere. But if you look at what Big 12 is making from per school, from TV deals, mm-hmm. That's going to be true. That statement you just said is going to be true in like 15 years.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of dough.
It is.
That's
no,
what I'm saying.
No, absolutely.
I mean,
get your money while you can, because it's not going to be there on a yearly basis. You're going to need to have it in the bank to live off of.
But would you bet Utah's even in the Big 12 in 15 years?
No. In fact, I suspect they won't be. In fact, it's more likely they're in the Pac-12 in 15 years than it is the Big 12. You know what I mean? Like, we somehow realize that geography matters in college athletics, and we put back together the idea that if you're in the West, you should be in a conference that's based in the West.
Stanford and Cal are in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Stanford and Cal.
Yeah, they play in the East Coast time zone.
They're quite literally on the Pacific Ocean. Not the Atlantic Coast
it
at all.
It says Atlantic in the title of the school.
Atlantic
or in
Coast
the title of the conference.
I mean, even Pac-12, that was Pacific 12. That wasn't Pacific Coast.
No.
Atlantic Coast Conference. Whatever. Hans is here. Hey, buddy. You look good. Hans is ready. Look, he looks hungry. Literally and figuratively. Hungry for some great sports talk radio and maybe some cheese fries.
You know what? I'm excited to watch Nebraska.
Said nobody ever. Why today? Nebraska?
They've got the kid that everyone's calling the Japanese Steph Curry.
Oh, okay.
He's has a chance to be, like Gulkey, has a chance to be one of these kids that takes over the tournament.
Fun week this week, Ben. Thanks to everybody who came out and supported us for watching these games. The station is going to be at JCW's here in Harriman all day. So if you didn't have a chance to come out during our show, come out for Hans and Scotty or JJ.
Sarah's coming down.
Sarah's going to come down and
Sarah.
Grab some food. Oh, yeah. Come meet Sarah for sure. Big celebrity. Sarah, are you excited to get some JCW?
Yes, you guys have been talking about it for the past 2 days, and I can't wait. I will be coming a little later. I'll probably be there around JJ and Alex time. But
she did not let you finish the sentence before she told you she was excited to get JCW.
Awesome. Well, we will talk to you on Monday.
Thanks, Sean.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.